these are IMC Krems International Business Students on Air.
Hello world, this is Lawrence and...
This is Janetta. We are from the master program IBE at the IMC Krems. Today, we want to ask you one question, which is, did you know that the G20 countries, which is 19 countries such as China, the US, Russia, Canada, and the EU, account for 80% of the world's GDP? And it is exactly this international forum that has agreed upon a global minimum corporate tax rate by the end of the summer. More than 130 countries have signed up the agreement so far, which will be put into action by the year 2023. And not only will this change have an impact on countries that have been seen as tax havens so far, but also will the big global players such as Google, Amazon, or Starbucks be affected tremendously. Shifting profits for the reasons of tax avoidance seem to have become the new target of international decision makers, unsurprisingly taking into consideration the fact that tax avoidance, which is the legal counterpart to tax evasions, has caught the eye of the public and is being instrumentalized by politicians all over the world over the past decade, declaring it an immoral activity.
Today we want to discuss this topic with Dr. Christian Massoner, who is director at EY in Vienna and a specialist, not to say a guru, in international tax and transaction services. Woo! Welcome! Christian, would you like to introduce yourself a little bit so our audience know?
Sure, happy to do so. Thanks for having me. So my name is Christian. I was born in Carinthia and moved to Vienna a while ago to study. And after studying business and law at the WU Vienna, I started my career actually in academia and spent 4.5 years at the WU teaching at the Institute for Austrian and International Tax Law. And then, that was pretty much exactly 10 years ago, I moved into practice and am now a director for international tax law and transaction tax services here at EY Vienna.
Thank you for being here. We brought in Christian today to give us unique insights on the upcoming global minimum corporate tax and discuss future developments in this area. But do we actually need a global tax system? Janetta, are there some companies which pay less tax than others?
Well, Lawrence, that's a very interesting question, because recent analysis show that the Silicon Six, that is companies such as I mentioned, Google, Facebook, or even Netflix, have paid an average tax rate of only 16.2% in the US between 2010 and 2019. But what is interesting is that the federal income tax rate of this period has amounted to 35%.
Oh.
So what happened here is that we actually have a tax gap, right? Because $155 billion of tax have not even been paid in that period. Ms. Massoner, before we start discussing the implementation of this tax rate, would you be so kind and explain to our audience how is it possible that this system of tax avoidance that seems to be legal actually works? And could you name some famous examples?
That's a very good question. And I think that we need to take a step back here and pause a little bit and ask ourselves, can we really trust those numbers that you just mentioned? Because I've been dealing with tax basically for the last 15 years now. Mm-hmm. And if you ask me to comment on the effective tax rate of a specific company, I would find that a very difficult or maybe even impossible task to reasonably calculate the effective tax rate based on public information.
Why is that?
The question is, what are your sources of data? And usually you just have the financial, the consolidated financial statements of a group. If you take, for example, I don't know, Amazon, you only find in the internet or on the company website, you find the consolidated financial statements for the whole group, where you see exactly one line of tax payments for all countries where the group operates. Mm-hmm. This line includes not only tax cash payouts, but also other quite complex accounting figures, like, for example, capitalization of deferred tax assets, or other let's say, really artificial figures that will not that will basically make it very hard for you to tell how much tax has this company actually really paid this year. And then there are other factors like tax loss carry forwards. You could have, for example, even in Austria, you could have a really profitable company with, say, 100 million of profit, which pays almost zero tax. Why is that? Because we have rules, for example, if you have incurred losses in previous years, you can carry those losses forward and only be taxed once your profit actually exceeds the losses from previous years. So you have a profit in your books, but you pay zero tax. Are you a tax evader then? No, you're not, because you simply follow the rules in the Austrian tax law. And that, and there are also other examples. If we especially look at those big US multinationals that you mentioned, they're basically exposed to the US tax law. And the US tax law is also a very complex and ambiguous tax system. And so, long story short, I think it's very, very hard to trust those studies. But if we trust those studies, let's take that as a thought experiment. If we trust those studies, then that's, of course, a problematic situation that requires some sort of attention. I can only tell you an example from my practice, if I may. Or not,
yes,
actually, it's not from my practice. Yeah. It's a case that I heard from from public information. But there was a company in the United Kingdom, a big group, who were unhappy about the situation because they thought they really followed the tax laws. They paid the taxes that they were supposed to pay, but they thought, yeah, it's not in line with their profitability. And they wanted to pay more. And they also don't like this bad image, because everyone says, those studies that you just mentioned, they say, okay, those guys, they are evading taxes, they are not paying their fair share of tax. So they approached the tax authorities in the United Kingdom, and they asked them, we would like to pay some more. Can we pay you, let's say, 10 million more?
I have read about that case.
And what do you think the Her Majesty's Revenue Service responded?
I think that they wouldn't say no to such a good offer.
No, they had to say no.
They had to say no.
Because that's actually a quite critical situation for a tax officer.
Mm-hmm.
If he accepts money that the company doesn't owe under, according to the law,
so they were not able
he's in
to
a bribery situation, or he would do something very, very illegal. So he had to say, sorry, the law is as it is, we cannot accept it.
Wow, that's
so it's a quite difficult situation. And I can tell you another experience from my practice. Those companies that you talked about, or actually basically all big multinationals, they are not privately owned, in the sense of they are not owned by their founders or by a specific family. They are owned by many institutional investors. They are owned by small private investors. They are owned by the public, basically, which means that the management and the ones who are responsible for preparing and filing the tax returns, they are not declaring the tax returns for their own money, but for someone else's money and someone else's property. And now I ask you, why would such a person do something really aggressive, something that he could even go to prison for?
Usually for own benefits.
But he doesn't benefit from it, because it's not
his
own money.
That's the point.
He just gets his salary, and if he does something really wrong, he goes to prison. So those guys, they're actually very cautious to stick to the law, to the rules out there, and not break the rules. And that's why, that's at least my personal experience, nowadays you don't see too much really aggressive tax planning with multinationals. Because there's simply no motivation for them to do that. They stick to the rules.
Mm.
And on the other hand, they have to stick to the rules, because if you're, for example, a CFO of a company,
yeah,
and there is a legal opportunity for you to structure, let's say, your business in a way that you save some taxes, you are basically obliged to do it. Because if there are two ways to reach a goal, one, you pay more taxes, the other way, you pay less taxes. you have to go the route with the less tax exposure, because otherwise you breach your professional obligations towards your investors, towards your shareholders.
Exactly.
And you can actually lose your job for that. Yeah. So it's a very unfortunate situation, I would say, for taxpayers, because they are not happy about the rules themselves. But they are simply, they have to live with the tax laws that are out there. Yeah. So if we talk about, and if this is really, if the statistics that you mentioned are really true, I think that's a question that really need to be sent to the legislators out there, to the governments. Why is it so? And what are you going to do to change it?
Mm-hmm. So the public attention usually goes in the direction of the companies rather than the governments, because they try to put the blame on the multinationals rather than the institution that allows this kind of behavior. That's very good to know, and I think that we have gained a pretty good insight
in
how the process works now. But what would be interesting to know as well is in how far this implementation of the global minimum corporate tax rate, since also 136 countries so far have signed up for it by October 2021, why does the public believe that if we have a minimum corporate tax, this would put an end to the possibility of shop around for lower tax rates?
That's a very good question, and I'm afraid I don't have the perfect answer for that. I just have a few comments on that. And key comment or key thought of mine is that the tax rate alone will not tell you how much tax you pay. Because the even more important than the tax rate is actually the tax base. So what's your base that you apply the tax rate to? And as long as you do not harmonize or make a global, let's say, minimum standard for the rules to determine the tax base, the tax rate as such is maybe just more a psychological signal or whatever to the public, but it will not have the impact, I think, that the public thinks it will have. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So as you mentioned, harmonization, do you think, like, if we could create a legal framework of global taxation, would this be the ultimate solution for tax evasion or whatever kind of unfairness in the competition?
I do believe so, yeah. I do believe so, because only if you harmonize the rules to calculate the tax base, you will have a really transparent competition between countries, because then you can really compare the tax systems and the rules and the actual tax burden that companies will face in those countries. But I'm also afraid that looking, for example, at experiences within the European Union over the last 10 to 50 or 15 to 20 years, actually, it is quite unrealistic or even totally unrealistic that we will achieve such harmonization, because there was actually an project of the European Commission to harmonize the corporate income tax systems within the European Union. It was called the Common Consolidated Corporate Tax Base, that was launched in 2007, and in 2000, I think it was 10 or 11, there was even a directive proposal, so a legislation proposal,
mm-hmm.
published by the European Commission. And this proposal, I think it was from an academic perspective, from a theoretical perspective, it was very, very nice, and personally I also wish that this had succeeded, but on a political level this was not even close to being implemented, unfortunately, because it simply affected the interests of the member states of the European Union are so different, and this is really a core function of a country, the taxing power, and they do not want to give this out of their hands. So if it's unrealistic on a European level, it's on a global level, I think it's even more unrealistic.
So there's a certain border that countries don't want to cross when it comes to giving up their independence, and harmonizations, as much as they appreciate it in a lot of aspects, so this might be one of the areas that should not be touched or will remain untouched in the future as well. Now back to Lawrence.
Yeah, so from your opinion, can you confirm that you will see no future harmonization in tax regulations worldwide or within the EU? What do you think is the future of harmonization in this area?
That's certainly not the case. So there will be some sort of harmonization. For example, we've also seen over the last few years, we have seen some harmonization in the anti-tax avoidance, let's say, area. So there have been a few directives issued by the European Union on measures to combat tax evasion.
Mm-hmm.
And this stuff is, there's a political agreement that this is needed. Yeah. And no government wants to expose itself and say, we will not support an initiative that combats tax evasion, obviously. So it's bits and pieces, it's small areas, small elements of the tax system, but the big areas, like the whole corporate income tax framework, that's something that I do not think will be harmonized. I would like to be surprised and see it come, but I'm afraid it will not come, at least not in the near future.
So that is really interesting. When it comes to matters such as corruption, we have found now that this is an area where harmonization is wanted and where cooperation can be expected or is expected also in the future. Really great insight. So now we want to address a few countries specifically, because the deal that was agreed upon would not have been possible if Ireland, Estonia and Hungary wouldn't have dropped their opposition and signed up. What would be interesting to know is, do you think that countries such as Hungary would have left the European Union in case they would not have wanted to comply with this regulation? Or could we expect also a future, let's say, Huxit due to these attempts?
That's a very difficult question, and it's not within my field of expertise. Personally, I think that Hungary, if they wanted to leave the European Union, they will find a better excuse than that, hopefully. And I also think that that Hungary is not so relevant in the global international tax framework. I think it's more relevant was the opposition of Ireland, because Ireland is actually a very important bridge between the European Union and the United States, for example. Many international groups use structures that involve Ireland, and it's also the European headquarters of several big tech multinationals. And Ireland, I think they did achieve certain compromises, because the original wording of this Pillar 2 agreement was amended in a way that there was, first of all, there was, I think, a promise that the 15% tax rate that is now agreed will not be increased in the future.
Yes.
So that, I think, was a success for Ireland. And the second thing is that there's an exemption for multinationals with a turnover of less than 750 million euros. And that was also not there in the previous wording. So I think Ireland has achieved some negotiation successes. I'm sure they had their reason for that. But at the end of the day, it's probably unrealistic that one European country, one country that represents, let's say, the civilized world, is, let's say, it fights for low tax rates on a global level. I think that's also an image that no civilized government wants to have.
But it's really amazing. I mean, if we think about it, Ireland has gained some negotiation power on an international level due to the multinational corporations standing behind it.
Yeah, that's actually crazy.
Fascinating.
Yeah. Wow. So, Christian, do you see any reason why now, maybe during the times of a pandemic, why now they brought in this regulation? Why is it now? Is there a reason for the timing?
That's also a good question. I mean, the whole project started with BEPS, the big base erosion and profit shifting project of the OECD, where the final reports were published in 2015. And this project now, it has let's say, evolved from the BEPS action reports. So might have been possible that it could be argued that this is simply a natural process, and the BEPS actions developed into what we see now. It might also be the case that the pandemic has accelerated this process, because most countries have spent an insane amount of money to fight the pandemic, and I think all governments now need to look into their income situation and save some costs as well, and that means that they will not only, but that they will have to look at their tax rates and maybe increase the tax rates. So if the trend is to slightly increase tax rates all over the world, I think that's just in line with the needs of the countries after the pandemic and deficit spending in the pandemic.
So as we can see, there also might be winners of this new regulation.
Yeah, it sounds like this, because as we know that some of the critics say that on the one hand 15% is not enough for a global corporate tax rate, and others say that only the rich countries will benefit, so that we will have here a shift of the winners and the losers between the global south and potentially the global north. And what others also criticize is that this original idea came from the G7 nations, so a pretty exclusive circle of countries, including the world's largest IMF advanced economies, such as Canada, France, Germany, Italy, Japan, the UK and the US. But Mr. Massona, would you tell us a little bit more about your own assessment on who the potential winners and losers around the globe would be? As you also mentioned, that one of the main reasons for this whole implementation of the tax rate would be to reduce the government deficit and to also have a way to balance the increased expenses that incurred due to COVID-19.
That's probably the most difficult question that you've asked me before, and I think it's too early to say who will be the winners and who will be the losers, because we don't even have draft rules yet. So we really need, I think, to wait for the final laws and then make assessments. I mean, the big multinationals, our big clients, they start modeling their tax situations in their groups, but I think with the information currently available, it's simply not possible. Because if we just take a very simple example, if we look at a country that has no corporate income tax system at the moment, like the United Arab Emirates, for example. They have no corporate income tax at the moment. The question is, will they be obliged, or will they have to introduce one in the future? And then you cannot simply say that they will pay, that the companies out there will have to pay 15% on their accounting profits. You have to wait for the tax law, because you simply don't know how the tax base will be calculated. And there is also another, let's say, side of the coin that makes this analysis even more complex, because if you look at industrial countries, so that wasn't meant offensive previously when I mentioned it, but if you use the term the civilized world, so the industrial developed countries, all of them have a very, let's say, sophisticated tax regime that has developed over the last decades.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I'm an expert in the Austrian system, so I can tell you, for example, that Austria has on their own multinational firms with Austrian headquarters, there are rules that make it very difficult or even impossible for Austrian groups to shift tax substrate into foreign low tax countries. And one of those rules, for example, if we take this as an example, is the so-called controlled foreign company regime, the CFC rule, which basically says if you put passive income, passive activities into the Cayman Islands, so if an Austrian company creates a subsidiary on the Cayman Islands where they have no tax regime, and there's just, because you cannot transfer, for example, a factory or a big store into the Cayman Islands because there is no place and no employees and no customers and so on. But you can, for example, you could transfer passive movable income generators like royalties, for example, like bank saving accounts with interest income, or like a share portfolio with dividend income. So things that you can easily transfer to a small island, and where you could think that on this small island you get tax exempt income. And Austria has the CFC rule, where it basically says, okay, if you do that, you will simply remain taxable in Austria. So we will not accept the existence of this Cayman Island entity. We'll just tax this income in Austria. And the relevant threshold actually is 15%.
Okay.
The question is, if we now get a global minimum tax rate of 15%, all those measures in the civilized countries that counter tax evasion, they will no longer be needed, or might no longer be needed. And the question is, will they improve those measures, that they will still kick in and hit companies even harder, that they now really have to pay abroad and in Austria another time? Will it end up in double taxation?
Okay.
So that's a very, I think, so the question is, how will the, let's say, the currently low tax countries implement those rules? Then how will the civilized countries with high tax rates react? And what will this mean at the end of the day for the companies? And my personal fear is that the ones who will be the losers are the companies, because they will face even more complexity than today and potentially double taxation.
So we still also have a lot of uncertainty as well involved.
Definitely.
So far.
Yeah.
Okay, wow. Thank you so much for your opinion on that.
Thank you, Lawrence. Leads us to the last question here. At this point, I would like to cite President Joe Biden, who said that for the first time in history, a strong global minimum tax would finally even the playing field for American workers and taxpayers along with the rest of the world. And to add up on that, US Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen said that it would be a victory for American families as well as international businesses. Do you agree with those two statements? And what do you think is the reasoning behind this particularly beneficial impact on the US economy? And also, is there possibly a connection to the statement that part of the motives behind the deal could be seen as a way of preventing a future trade war over digital service taxes?
I'm not an expert on the American tax regime. I just know some basic on the American tax regime. But if I may outline the international framework of taxation in the United States briefly, it works as follows. If you are the let's put it differently, the U.S. international tax system is based on the concept of capital export neutrality. That means that the United States will tax their corporations the same whether they invest and do business within the United States or whether they do that in another country. They will, at the end of the day, always end up with the same tax burden in the United States. Which is different to the tax system in most continental Europe countries, for example. In Austria, the principal concept is capital import neutrality. So we, in Austria, for example, we tax everyone the same who does business in Austria. Doesn't matter if it's an Austrian or an United States, so a company from the United States. Whenever you do business in Austria, you tax the same. And those two concepts, they don't match with each other. This has an effect that you can see with a very nice example is Apple. I don't know if you've heard that Apple has an insanely huge amount of cash sitting in some subsidiary outside the United States of America. And the reason is this international tax framework that I mentioned. So the United States, they say, if you do business abroad, you can do business abroad. You can, we don't care as long as you do business abroad. There are certain elections that you can make and certain planning strategies that you are not immediately taxed in the United States. But whenever you transfer the profits that you made outside of America back to the United States, you will be taxed as if those profits had been made in the United States.
So that's probably why they won't transfer it back to the US.
That's
that
why they don't transfer it back at the moment, and why they have billions and billions of US dollars sitting in this subsidiary and cannot transfer it back. Yeah, exactly. They wait for every 10, 20 years, some president really needs money urgently, and then they say, okay, if you repatriate now, you get a tax saving of so much percent, so you can repatriate now. It's a one-time opportunity within 20 years, and so we will make a deal. Will be interesting to see when that happens next time. So, but where's the link to our topic? The link is that those companies, those US companies, make profits abroad and repatriate the funds back to the United States, these profits will be taxable in the United States, but at the same time, the United States have to credit the taxes paid abroad. And that means that the higher the taxes outside of America, the lesser money will get, because first of all, lesser money will get back, and also the tax has to be credited in the United States. And that is why I cannot fully understand the reasoning of President Biden, or at least one could doubt that it makes sense. But on the other hand, I think maybe there's a long-term strategy, economic policy strategy behind that, because at the end of the day, this tax regime of the United States, it is problematic, and it also puts American companies in a disadvantaged situation compared with many other countries. And maybe the overall strategy is simply to align the fundamental tax concept of the United States with other, let's say, more fancy tax systems. Maybe that's the background of that. Yeah. But that's at least my view on the topic. And if your second part of your question concerned the digital taxes, that is of course a quite critical issue. As you might know, in Austria we also have a digital advertisement tax, which is thankfully too small for the United States of America to really notice, I think. But other countries like France, for example, they also have such a tax. And they have really very strict sanctions that were issued by the United States against France, also against Austria, but the Austrian ones were not so bad, because I think Austria, it's not big enough for them to really care about it. But at the end of the day, this is also a tax war between the United States and other countries, because at the end of the day, the question is, who is allowed to tax the big tech companies who are all situated in the United States? So it's a political war between the United States government and the rest of the world, and apparently now this is a compromise, the Pillar 1 resolution of the OECD, which is so complex and so complicated that I don't know if you've read it, but it's so complicated that we will have to wait to see for draft laws for that to be there, but I have my doubts whether this will really work.
And so far to me it appears like the global minimum corporate tax is more a tranquilizer for the public. It would be more important to harmonize the tax base these companies actually are taxed on. So I think we're at the end of the podcast. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you very much for being here, Christian, with us to share your knowledge. And see you next time. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Take care.